It's time for the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, and I'm here along with my guest co-host, Dr. Nora Mental. And every weekend, we're here, we're doing life together, and as always, we're so glad that you have joined us.
I'm happy to be here, too. Thank you.
You have a PhD in leadership, and so you've been working with millennials. You've been studying them. You've been studying all the generations and the shifts and the changes, because we're having to now see and give power to the people that are in this younger generation, and we're looking at how we can do that and how we can be helpful and coaches.
Right. Today, what we'd want to do is dig a little bit deeper and learn more about what makes this young generation tick, especially in the workplace. And I sure remember my parents fretting over how the next generation is going to ruin everything that they've worked for.
It's true. You know?
In fact, listen to this millennial and what they think about our generation.
When I think millennials, I think overlooked, because a lot of people, you know, give them a bad rap or say how we're going to live up to previous generations. But I think there's still a lot of potential, and it may look different and we may have different ideas, but I think we should give them a fair chance.
Every generation sees the next one and sees the problems because they're not just like them.
Exactly. And they fear that everything we've worked for is going to be lost.
You know, Norm, some people have called these young people the disruptors. So it's a disruptive generation. And they have disrupted the entire taxi cab industry, if we think about Uber and Lyft, right?
That's exactly
right. It's a whole nother paradigm, a whole nother way of thinking about it.
Completely disrupted that industry. Look at the hospitality industry. Hotels now are desperate to get you to book a room with them because you don't have to. Thanks to Airbnb, you can get a room anywhere in the world online.
We haven't done that, have we?
Well, we're an old generation, apparently.
We're boomers. We haven't done that, but our daughter, she's going to be doing it when she goes overseas a little bit. A recent study by Pew Research shows that millennials are now the single largest portion of the workplace. There's over 53 million of them in the workplace.
Working, right.
When it comes to working with them and working for them, maybe you have a boss who's millennial. We have a friend who has a boss who is a millennial, and he complains all the time that the kid doesn't give him any credit for his experience, what he's been through in life.
I teach the millennials in my leadership class how to work with people who are older than you.
That's a great strategy. I think it's wise for us to consider their strengths, their weaknesses. Here's what one of our listeners has to say about millennial workers.
When I hear the word millennial at the place that I work, it seems that A, they always feel entitled to better shifts and coming in and being able to like make their money. But at the same point in time, they always have a desire to improve the place, and they're always trying to seek how to make it better. And they're not just like there to make money.
That's an interesting dynamic of this generation. We are seeing that they are improvers. They may be disruptors, but in their minds, they're improving it by disrupting it.
I must be a millennial at heart. And I are, because we're always looking at things and thinking, how can we make that better? How can we improve that?
I teach my kids all the time, challenge the process. Are we doing this the very best way we possibly can? Well, I think they do that inherently. You know, we're finding out that they love to work in teams. They want to make friends in the workplace, and they love to work with a diverse set of coworkers, not the same people over and over again.
And I think that team working and wanting to find some meaning in their workplace with the relationships of the people they're working with is a good thing. It's something much better than our generation, where it was all about practically killing yourself for the money.
Right.
It wasn't about, wow, do I have great
some
relationships?
Purpose.
I was interviewing a potential psychiatrist for one of the positions that we had open. And one of the things he said to me is, I don't really care so much about the money. Are the people great people to work with? Am I going to enjoy being in that workplace? And I thought, wow, it's rare do I hear people say that kind of thing. So that was kind of refreshing. I think this is a good thing. I think there are good skills that can come in handy with these millennials that can teach us something.
Oh, I agree. And the notion of diversity is important. Here's what one millennial described.
Diverse, in that I think A bunch of us are doing different things. Some of us who are still kind of heading towards high-end careers. Some of us who are not so motivated, and a bunch in between. And I think just the experiences that we all have are different, whether it be traveling or like social media, just whatever we're involved in. So I would say as a group, we're quite diverse.
Some people would call that being ADD. Constantly needing new stimuli.
Well, it's that stimulation thing we talked about last weekend, where the dopamine in the brain is so used to being stimulated by instantaneous things and change and fast pace and multitasking, even though multitasking doesn't typically work.
I think there are some good skills that they bring better than we. They have a can-do attitude. You give them a task and they really want to do it. Now, what they want is feedback about how they're doing, and they want very clear parameters about how to reach the goal. But they're all about getting it. They love that. They love a variety of tasks. They want to do the very best. They want to please. There's so many positives about millennials in the workplace. It's great.
Feedback is important. That's a very big generational shift. My dad is a World War II veteran. He is like, you just do it. Nobody's going to tell you yes or no. I'm not going to give you any feedback about that.
That's the great generation.
That's the great generation. Right. Then for us, we're thinking, well, we would like some validation for what we're doing. But this generation wants the feedback. Am I on the mark? Am I doing it okay? Am I reaching the goal? As employers and bosses, if we're from a different generation, we need to recognize that and not look at them as so needy.
I had a student come to me and complain that a professor had said he was too needy, asking too many questions. And he was desperately hurt by that. He goes, I just want to understand.
I think that we have to think about this from a leadership point of view. They want leadership. They want structure.
Right.
They want the older generations to give them some direction, but they also want to have their ideas heard. Mm-hmm. And they want their ideas respected. You and I would say, well, they haven't earned that respect yet, but they see it very, very differently.
Mm-hmm. That's true. They also want to know where their career is going. Think of our daughter. She's always saying, where am I going? What am I going to do? What's next for me in my life? They're always looking for the next challenge. And might say that's part of that ADHD thing. They're always wanting something brand new. But I think in this case, they're more focused on doing something meaningful. And they're constantly questioning, is what I'm doing meaningful? Is it working for me? Mm-hmm. Is it helping other people? What else is there?
One of the things that I've noticed is that they seem to be much more flexible in their schedule. You and I would get a little crazy with that. Here's a typical millennial scenario. We'll use our daughter. So, Katie, what are you doing? Well, I've got this option, this option, this option, this option. Well, which one are you going to do? I don't know yet. Because I'm waiting.
And so they make last-minute decisions.
They do, but they're very flexible. So we look at the positive side of that is they're flexible, and they want a life away from work. And I think that that's very, very, very positive because we've gotten so stressed out, so burned out, got so many health problems related to people overworking and almost workaholism that they're trying to take a different approach, maybe because they've seen that in their parents.
That could very well be. And they see the need for the downtime. Our son will come back from school and from work, and he'll go, you know, I just have to have some downtime. And we're going, no, 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 go do this, go do that. And he goes, no, I'm going to chill.
We're driven. We're just a little bit too type A with all of this. But even the driven ones, I work with medical students who are very type A, very driven. I don't have to twist their arm when it comes to balance. They're wanting to take the time to exercise. Right. They want to take the time to chill with a movie or something. And you and I are like, watch a movie? We're going to keep pushing this so you understand where they're coming from and coach positively.
Right. When we return with more of the Dr. Linda Mental Show, we're going to hope that we can discover a better understanding of what lies beneath this generation's thinking and their behaviors. We'll be right back.
Mother and daughter relationships are powerful, and they impact all our other relationships. Think about it. The way you react with your mom typically is the way you might react with other people. Yet this important bond can be filled with tension when both women try to find their own voice and develop a sense of self. So working through the mother-daughter relationship can be a challenge, but it is so worth the effort. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, and I would love to help you navigate this important relationship and strengthen it to the best it can be. That's why I wrote, I Love My Mother, But, a book to strengthen the mother-daughter relationship. We all love our mothers, but sometimes we need a little help working through our differences. I Love My Mother, But, available on my website, drlindamental.com, or online where books are sold.
Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Today we are digging in deeply to uncover truths about a generation of young people that a lot of us call millennials. What is it that makes them tick, and how is that seen most keenly in the workplace?
You know, when you think about it, Norm, this should be obvious to us, but millennials are the most connected generation in history. I know that seems obvious, but we need to think about what does that mean and how does that affect them. Listen to the word this millennial used to describe his generation.
Technologically savvy. I believe that because people that grew up in this day and age, they grew up with rising technology, with computers, with iPhones as they grow up. That became a part of their lives, and so they know more about how to integrate technology within their lives.
Well, he's exactly right. We call millennials people who were born from 1984 onward, and they've segmented that from 95 forward. They call them Gen Z as opposed to Gen Y, and that's the group who's never not known an internet. Think about it. The internet came about in 1991, 92, and by 95, by the time these kids were born, every household had the internet, had growing speed available to them, had a computer up. These kids didn't grow up with that blinking 12 on the VCR that some of the older
kids missed
did.
It. They've missed that experience.
They missed
it. I feel so bad.
Nobody knew how to program the dumb thing.
It's true.
But everything for them as a consequence has been instantaneous. Here's how another young lady puts it.
When I hear the word millennial, I think I hear present. So we live in the present. So we don't really, we want things to happen now. So like our parents before us, they were like worked the grind and they like expected it to be hard and like get the reward later on. So I think as millennials, we want it and we want it now. So we live more in the present than our future.
Okay, now how does that work with the career thing that you were talking about where they want to know where they're going?
She was saying that we want it now, we want it instantaneously, and that's how she defined being in the present. I would argue that most millennials who are very present and want it right now are also thinking about how am I doing right now? When I was talking about they're always looking toward the future and how can we improve something, it's because they're analyzing how well they're doing at the moment.
I got you. So here's another one. Since they're completely reliant on the internet, they turn to the internet all the time to help them and answer questions. And they feel like the answer they find on the internet is constantly right. They're more interested in bloggers rather than experts. So this is a big shift that you and I had to come to terms with because we both have expertise in our field and we've been called on to be experts in the kinds of things that we talk about. And yet it doesn't mean a whole lot to them. They're like, well, what did the blogger say about this?
I remember in the classroom a few years ago, kids all had their laptops open and I had said something and about a minute or two later, one student raised his hand and said, Dr. Mental, there's been an update to what you just told us. And he had Googled it and found that there were new statistics, whatever. I have no idea what it was I said, but he challenged that immediately because he trusted his online sources. And that word trust is important because do you remember when they first asked us to start putting credit card information online and none of us were going to do it?
Yeah, we weren't going to do it.
We vowed we would never do it. Well, now everybody does it. This generation instantly accepted that it was safe and they trusted.
Yeah, they didn't even think twice about it. It's a very interesting shift, isn't it? If you're working with a millennial, specifically, let's get some coaching strategies.
Yeah, how can we maximize these kids?
Yeah, and we have a Sunday school class. We have millennial employees. We have people that are working with millennials. Let's look at a first one. The first one is about providing that structure.
But they also grew up, many of them, more than half of them, in broken homes where they might have been latchkey kids and there was only one parent home and it was difficult. So they value the return to a structure.
When you've got them in the workplace, it helps if you give them monthly due dates.
Right.
If the job has fairly regular hours. Now, I know they don't like regular hours. They like the idea that they can come and go when they want. But that's not real life. For so many occupations or jobs, that doesn't work. You have to show them that certain activities are scheduled every single day and that we have meetings and we have minutes and we have agendas and goals have to be clearly stated and progress will be assessed in your job. I think one of the keys for millennials is defining assignments and what it means to be successful in that assignment for them so they're not left with a lot of ambiguity in that
area.
They
always ask, how do I get an A?
Yeah.
What does it take?
Because they were taught to the test with the SOLs. That's one of the downfalls of the SOLs.
They're accustomed to having this kind of information. They also look to us to provide leadership and guidance for them. The whole concept of mentoring is very, very important to millennials. They want to find you as a source of information, of wisdom, a safe place where they can vent. They love to spend time with people who will teach them and coach them and guide them and direct them. So when you you can do that with people you hire, and you can't do that with everybody,
right.
Clearly. You're going to get the best out of that employee who's a millennial.
I've seen you spend a lot of time with your students. I want to emphasize that word, time.
Yeah.
Because you meet with them and take time, where a lot of people might look at that and go, well, but you have to spend times. Another coaching strategy is to encourage the millennial self-assurance. Now, we're thinking they've been told their whole life that they're special and they're great.
Right.
They need this kind of constant, you're doing great, you can do it. Take a positive attitude towards them.
Well, that's because you said earlier they had lower self-esteem because they realized they hadn't earned a trophy. So now what you're saying is they really do need some affirmation.
And they're used to their parents doing that. If you're an employee, you're going to continue that kind of relationship with them. Encourage them. Don't squash them or contain them. Okay. Continue to encourage them.
And we know that they're good with teams. They've grown up on teams. They work on teams in school. If you're an employer and you can put millennials on a team, especially with other more seasoned veterans and whatever it is you do at your company, they're going to learn more. They're going to thrive in that kind of environment because they want to contribute.
Another coaching strategy is to listen to them. Sometimes the boomer generation has this idea, well, I have all the years of experience. They need to listen to me. But they're used to being listened to. The two of us, we sat for hours with our kids, especially when they were teenagers, listening to their concerns, listening to what they needed help with, helping them problem solve. So they're used to this. They've had the best listening, most child-centric audience in history. You think about that and say, okay, I need to listen.
Right. There are a couple things I want to put together here. They're great at multitasking, or at least they think they are. You would tell us that the brain doesn't really truly multitask. But because of that, they love challenge and change. And so as an employer, you need to think about, how can I stimulate these young employees to try new things? There's a whole concept of being risk aversive that a lot of boomers have. And what I would encourage employers to say is, no, let's take risks. Let's make it a safe place to give these young people the opportunity to explore and to expand and to experiment and try new things.
Take advantage of their skills. Take advantage of all their computer and their electronic literacy. That's a serious skill that they have that they can bring to your business, they can bring to your office. Capitalize on that networking ability and think again about their need for balance, because balance is important to them. They're going to want to think about doing different things. They're going to be on sports teams at your office. You know, if there's a team that's doing something, if there's a chance to connect and network in another meaningful way, they're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They're
right.
Needing to have that kind of balance. They don't want this 60-hour
work
week.
They're not going to do it.
They're not going to do it. They're going to look for jobs that don't include that.
You think of the big famous millennial companies, Google and all of these massive companies. They have fun places. They have places to hang out and places to play and places for sports and places to relax. Many companies even say, take a day off or half a day off a week and just think about brand new creative ideas.
Which does bring creativity. Listen to this quote from a business leader, Norm. You have to speak to them a little bit like a therapist on television might speak to a patient. You can't be harsh. You cannot tell them you're disappointed in them. You can't ask them to live and breathe the company. That's what you're saying, because they're living and breathing themselves, and that keeps them very busy.
And here's another one. The boomers do need to hear the message that they're going to have to start focusing more on coaching rather than bossing. If this generation in particular would just tell them, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do that, then they're going to walk. They want to participate. When we return, we're going to wrap up this great information and topic, and we want to look at it from a biblical and a spiritual context. We'll do that right after the break.
This is the Mental Health Minute. Here's Dr. Linda.
What do Thomas Jefferson, Agatha Christie, Pope John Paul II, and Princess Diana have in common? Well, these notable individuals and many others, past and present, share the habit of journaling. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda, the relationship doctor, and I've got some tips for you on the value of journaling. Whether you're just writing down a few thoughts or pouring out your heart on paper, journaling has some real benefits, like getting a handle on your emotions or a better understanding of other people or even organizing your priorities. Sometimes reading your older journal notes will help you appreciate the sweet little details of life you enjoyed but maybe have forgotten. One of the best benefits of journaling comes when you look back and you see how the Lord has been there in all your circumstances, directing your steps and taking care of the things that matter to you. If you've not considered journaling before, give it a try and see which of those benefits journaling might bring your way.
Hey, And welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. If you'd like to learn more about the topic we've been discussing the last couple of weeks, millennials, you can check out her blogs on myfaithradio.com and her website, Dr. Linda Mental.
Norm, we've been talking about how you work with this generation of young people in your role as a professor and a dean at the university level. Have you noticed a spiritual difference overall from year to year? You've been doing this since the 90s, and I've been doing it since the 80s. Have you seen a difference?
I do. In the last few years, I've been shocked at the bigger differences that I've been seeing. I think what we need to do is create a context and understand the world into which these kids, probably shouldn't call them that, were born. We grew up in an era that was called sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That was the whole thing our parents hated. That was a time that rebellion was really beginning to become acceptable in society. We rebelled against authority. It was the early stages of what many scholars and sociologists now call postmodernism, after the modern era. The big thing was we were going to deconstruct. We were going to break down and create brand new rules. Our parents' society had created, this is how you do it, this is how you do it, this is how you do it. And our generation began the whole idea of saying, nah, I think we're going to rebel against that.
Yeah, and I remember Elvis was the beginning yeah. of the major change in the music world, and then the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and all the subsequent versions of music.
Yeah.
We grew up with, and I remember our parents hated it. And in fact, some of the churches were talking about this is the demise of society as we know it because of what they were rebelling against.
Right. Jesus had to come back at any moment because of all of this sin in the world. I remember one time my dad came into the room and I was listening to a Simon and Garfunkel album. Now, some of your listeners will know who Simon and Garfunkel are.
The millennials will not.
The millennials will not.
No.
But he made me take the record. It was a record off.
What, do they know what a record is? Yeah. Wait a minute.
Well, call it vinyl.
Vinyl.
Now, if we call it vinyl, they'll know what we're talking
classic
about.
Vinyl.
And this whole idea of postmodernism has also become an environment that the next generation, which was called Generation X, grew up into. And now the millennials, because of that, completely distrust authority. They just don't trust. It's not that authority may be bad. They just don't trust it being totally accurate. And they've discovered that they only can find truth, and they have to find it themselves, and they have to do it by experiencing it, which is different. In our generation and earlier generation, someone could argue into the gospel or could tell you about truth, and you would many times believe the argument. This group says, no, I don't believe you. I have to experience the truth. And there's some positives about that.
Well, there is. I'm thinking about the changes because they used to hand out tracts, and the idea was that you'd give a tract to somebody and they'll read it and they'll understand that that's true. Again, we're not criticizing it. We're definitely not saying that the rebellion was a good thing because it involves sin. And we've set up the seeds of this distrust in terms of us not being credible, us not being authentic. And we've set up in this contemporary church this whole notion of experiencing God. Mm-hmm. Where is God? It isn't in these huge auditoriums. We want to look at what are they looking for? And the positives of this, what is it that they really, really need?
Well, they distrust authority. They want to experience truth. But here's another one. Many postmoderns have completely rejected the notion of absolute truth.
I know that's scary.
And it's also contradictory. They go, absolutely, there is no such thing as absolute truth. Well, they just made an absolute statement. Look, these ideas are kind of complex. So what I try to do when things get too crazy for me is I like to reduce them to simplicity without diluting them. So here's my take on the postmodern millennial young person's spiritual journey. Now, follow me. If they can only experience truth, and that's how they know about truth, then what better way to know God than by doing what Scripture says, experiencing His love for them? We could spend hours talking about how God loves us and how He first loved us and how important His love is that allows us to respond to Him with love to Him. And when we experience His love, we can begin to love others. Experiencing truth from that perspective is perfect.
So when they walk into a church, no matter what's going on in that church, no matter what way you decide to do church, if they sense the Holy Spirit, if they feel the presence of God in that church, they are drawn to that.
They are. It's an experience.
It's an experience
for them.
And that's what we have to concentrate on. And then the Word of God, because the Word is live. That's it's alive. It's transforming. You don't read the Word. It isn't like reading a nice novel or literature, which can be beautiful in that. But the Word is the living Word of God, and it's transformative. And when a millennial or any age, when they get a hold of that and they begin to read that Word, word, and it's changing them and transforming them. Mm-hmm. It's powerful. And then mm-hmm. they have a powerful experience with the true living God.
And the beauty of that from an evangelism perspective is that because they're so networked and they trust each other online and face to face, they can talk about their experience to their unsaved friends or their pagan friends or their friends of other religions. And all they have to do is tell their experience, and it's accepted as your experience. And then the Holy Spirit can go, hey, and prompt that other person. So there's a whole new thread of evangelism that is much more personal and much more experience-based that God is using in this generation.
We have heard millennials talk about their longing for the awe of God.
That's right.
Say a little bit about the sacred and the mm-hmm. awe of God mm-hmm. that they feel like they're somehow missing.
There are too many churches who have tried to be cool and hip and have taken that awe out. And so we find droves of millennials finding old cathedrals and beautiful contemplative services or liturgical services that a lot of boomers go, well, that's boring or that's meaningless or it's not relevant. They're finding relevance because there's a sense of, wow, there's a huge, powerful God. And the art in the church is beautiful mm-hmm. and it's experiential. I'm feeling it.
Visual.
I'm touching it. I'm seeing it. Mm-hmm. They're very visual. They're media-saturated young people, and they love this kind of experience.
They want a space. They
That's
want a
it.
Sacred space. It sounds like the millennials who attend church, and we know there are fewer of them, mm-hmm.
unfortunately,
based on the surveys, but we know that those who are there do seem far more committed to God and the gospel
Much more.
Than their peers. I think there's great hope for this generation spiritually.
Oh, I do too. I think whatever their form of church, whether they go to church online or they go to a beautiful cathedral or they go contemplate under a tree, as some people might do, Jesus taught us in the Sermon on the Mount that their focus on experiencing God, the truth of God, is what gives them a hope of the future.
We know that God is always seeking true worshipers,
right.
don't we?
Yep.
And he wants yielded hearts. He wants followers who are committed to him for life. If you know a millennial, and I'm sure you do,
yes,
pray
you
for
do.
Them that they will experience God's love and that they will stay committed to the truth of God, and they will get in there and they'll know his word, and that they will reach right. those who are lost.
You know, some people call it lifestyle evangelism, but if you'll live God, if you'll mm-hmm. live the gospel, if you'll be Jesus to these people, they're going to see the authenticity. They're desperate for authenticity. And if they see an authentic Jesus in you, and they see you living a relationship with Jesus, even when things go wrong, when things are difficult, when bad things happen, they see how you react, that's drawing.
That's such a good word. Such a great topic, Norm. Thank you so much for the 2 weekends that you spent with us dissecting the millennial generation. And go to the archive. You can listen to this online. We encourage you to do that. Well, many thanks to our producer, Pam Miller, and our engineer, Jamie Hall, our social media director, Cody Gokenhauer, and our post-producer, Chris Underation. And thanks, of course, to you, my guest co-host, Dr. Norm Mintel, who made this show a great conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
The Dr. Linda Mintel Show is a production of WQLU-FM 90.9 in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Well, thanks for listening to this conversation from the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and you'll never miss a show.